You're listening to Speak Free with Simon O'Connor, right here on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Well, I'm very pleased to have a colleague of mine at RCR joining us now. His name's Alistair Harding. Amongst many things, you will know him as the voice of RCR. He may even give us a preview. Amongst many other claims to fame, he's a documentary filmmaker. You'll know his important work that he's led here on RCR through the likes of the Inquiry Sessions and Our Digital Future. But now he's leading the work around, and I always struggle with these four letters as an acronym, the CBDCs, Central Bank Digital Currency. So I've got Alistair on the show to talk us through what all of this means. So Alistair, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Simon. Really nice to be here.
The voice of RCR. Give us a, well, not so much a preview, a reminder.
You're listening to Reality Check Radio.
There we go. Someone has to do it. Alistair, look, thank you. So you're working on this, it's a fairly substantial documentary series around these central bank digital currencies. But we were talking before we came on live that this all started with some of your work, or is it investigations around Google, and now things spread from there. So talk us through it all.
Yeah, so when we started with Our Digital Future, which was the series which has turned into what we're now promoting, the Central Bank Digital Currencies series, which is being promoted at the moment, is when we first started talking about CBDCs, I had heard a guy called Dr. Robert Epstein on the Joe Rogan show. And what struck me about what he had to say was he's been studying Google and the way that Google, not only, we all know that Google surveils us, and that's what their advertising model is based on, but also the way that they end up being able to manipulate us with that information. And, you know, so for instance, if you're talking with your wife about her latest handbag, and you've never actually looked at handbags on the internet yourself ever before, but suddenly you start getting ads when you're surfing the internet and you're reading the news, and there's suddenly an ad for handbags. It's creepy when you think of it that way. But then think of it like you also have Gmail, and your kids get a Gmail account at school, and all your government ministers have Gmail accounts in the halls of parliament and so on. And then you start to realize how much information these guys are actually gathering. And then you talk to someone like Dr. Robert Epstein, like we did in episode one of the CBDC series, and you realize just how much they're manipulating people. So to me, that's the basis. That's the bedrock of the whole CBDC's discussion, because once you can understand that, you can understand just what the potential of the whole of digitization of our society really is. And it's the end of freedom as we know it. And that's the scary part of it. So I found that, you know, launching into that topic to begin with, it wasn't necessarily about CBDCs, it was about Google. But it gives you a really good idea of what we're talking about here, what the stakes are.
It's huge, and I have to say, someone like myself struggles to get my head around the enormity of it. I get the basic concepts, as you say. We share so much data, and I have to laugh, Alistair, when I was young and the internet was starting, huge issues around our privacy and sharing information, and now it's ubiquitous. We don't think twice. Well, most people don't think twice. Sign the Apple terms and agreements. We turn all our location sharings on, our Siri app, everything. Without potentially appreciating just all that data is going somewhere, and that somewhere is not just a amorphous nothing, it's actually controlled and used. And you've just given a great example around and how many of us exactly have said something, or we're talking about a holiday and all of a sudden the Cook Islands is appearing on my search. And it's like, really, how did that happen? But in this series, you obviously delve into that, but particularly around this central bank digital currency. So tell us a little bit about what even that is, because most of us know New Zealand has a reserve bank, but you're not talking specifically about that. It's even broader.
Well, yes, we are. But yes, you're also right. It is broader than that. So here in New Zealand, the Reserve Bank is promoting and studying and developing its own CBDC. So basically, every country in the world right now, apart from about five or six, are developing a CBDC. They're either designing one right now, or they're trialing one right now, or somewhere in between there. What a CBDC is, it's a central bank digital currency. So it is our reserve bank in that particular case, in our particular case, okay? What they do is they produce this CBDC, the central bank digital currency, and then they will issue it just like they issue our banknotes today. So all our banknotes are issued by the Reserve Bank as well. And this is supposed to, in their words, sit alongside it. So they started asking for feedback on their CBDC as they started to develop it. And the feedback came in from most people, most individuals that responded to the submissions, that they didn't want to lose cash, that they felt that a CBDC, a central bank digital currency, was going to restrict their privacy and all of those things and potentially could manipulate them. And so what the Reserve Bank then did was they decided, okay, well, people don't want to lose cash, but they started to make the argument, this is exactly the same as cash. It's just a digital form of cash. So they stopped using the word CBDC and they started calling it digital cash. It's a very cynical ploy to try and get people to agree to doing it. But what we're talking about here, a CBDC, is, in case your listeners don't understand what a CBDC is, a CBDC is a form of cash, but by definition, it can be controlled by whoever it is that's providing it. In our case, the Reserve Bank. So you can program a CBDC. By definition, that's what a CBDC is. It's programmable. So what that means is, for instance, if the Reserve Bank decides as part of its monetary policy that it wants to heat up the economy, maybe the economy's going a little bit slow and they need to get money moving around, they could program your money, your CBDC, to have an expiry date. That means that by the end of the month, if you don't spend your money or X amount of your money, then it's all going to, you won't be able to use it after that. Another way that they could use programmability in their money is, say, for instance, a beneficiary. You know, we hear talk a lot about how, you know, maybe the money's not being used for what it's supposed to, but for buying nappies, and, you know, the parents, the beneficiaries are instead buying cigarettes and alcohol. So this money could be programmed so that you can't buy cigarettes or alcohol. And all of these things sound like really good ideas and so on, until you start to think to yourself about, say, for instance, the COVID era, when, you know, they told us that we couldn't move more than 5 kilometers from our home. And then you start to think, well, okay, well, so they could use a CBDC, they could program it so you can't spend it more than 5 kilometers from your home. Or let's think about the climate, the so-called climate crisis. They could start to say, oh, you've been on one too many holidays this year. You know, you can't use it to buy airfares anymore and stuff like that. So that's what a CBDC is. It's a central bank digital currency that can be programmed, it can be tracked, it can be traced all by the central issuer, which is, in this case, the Reserve Bank. So that brings up a whole lot of different problems. Like, for instance, what happens to banks from now on? Is the Reserve Bank our banker? Do we really want to be surveilled? You know, you bring up the privacy thing earlier on, and I think to myself, you know, one of the things that people always talk about with privacy is they say, well, if I haven't done anything wrong, then I've got nothing to hide. Well, it's the same sort of thing as, like, why do you have curtains in your bedroom? Because there are some things that you do with your money which are intimate, which are private, which you don't need everybody to know about, and you certainly don't need your government to know about. So that, in a nutshell, is what the fears are with a CBDC and how it is completely different to cash. Cash is something which is portable, you can hold in your pocket. It holds value, it holds trust, all of those things. A CBDC is portable, yes. It does hold value, yes. Does it hold trust if you've got somebody looking into your wallet and looking over your shoulder every second of the day? I'd say that perhaps there isn't so much trust there. Also, cash is anonymous, and this is not anonymous. So when they say, if I just go back to the beginning of this little part, is when they say it's called digital cash now and not a CBDC, that to me is a very cynical play on words, because it is not cash if it's not anonymous.
Look, says me to you, 100% agree, because obviously you're the one who's delved deeply into this, but I've certainly noted the change of narrative that's coming out about this, as you say, trying to just appeal to people's perception of what cash is. I know there's been a lot of talk as well that, you know, this will make our lives easier. You'll be able to move your money about more because you're in control of it. And at one level you are, but it all, as you say, links back to that Reserve Bank, and that in turn to the whole global financial network that we have. It is no longer anonymous. And I actually quite like the examples you just gave. And I might even just take it, if you will, even half a step further, using something like climate change. We've seen governments, even in the time I was in Parliament, change the focus of the Reserve Bank. You know, it used to be just about inflation. Then the government said, actually, we want you to target housing. Well, you know, in this discussion, Alistair, well, why not have the Reserve Bank says, hey, we need to focus on climate change. So now that we've got this CBDC, and look, I just don't know why I get tongue-tied on four letters strung together that way. But they go, okay, well, we're just going to tweak how people can use their money in order to promote the climate. So, Simon, out goes your diesel vehicle, but you'll be able to spend money on electrics. It makes sense that they would, and why would they not do this? So I know you've been tapping different experts in your documentary series. So this is not just you, is it, discussing these issues? You're bringing in a range of experts across the world to talk about it.
Yeah, and look, what we tried to do throughout the series is we tried to build it. So, you know, as I said, we built it from the groundwork, the foundations of that discussion about the digitization of society with Dr. Robert Epstein at the very beginning. And then from there, you know, a range of New Zealand and international experts. We had Catherine Austin Fitz, who's an investment banker of quite world renown. She spoke to us in episode 3. We had Jodie Brunning, our own New Zealand Jodie Brunning, on a couple of times. She was talking about digital IDs and also the structure of the Reserve Bank's push for CBDCs here. We also had Farzan Irani, who a lot of our Reality Check radio listeners know about, on Paul Brennan's show and The Breakfast Show. Aaron Day, Efrat Fenningson, the Israeli journalist, G. Edward Griffin, the famous author of The Creature from Jekyll Island, all about the setting up of the Federal Reserve back in the early 1900s. And through it all, what they do is they paint a picture every step of the way on just how all of this is being built. And one of the episodes which really sticks out to me is the one where Farzan Irani, I had him on, and he was, at the time, he was in India, and he was living with his family, visiting with his family over there at the time, and they have a digital ID called the Aadhaar ID. And so what our discussion was about was how it is to live under this digitization of society. How do you live with the digital IDs? Because the digital IDs will come hand in hand with the CBDCs as well, right? And what he described was a world where by law, you cannot make the Aadhaar digital ID compulsory, but every company is making it compulsory to use their services. Well, it's not law to have to use it. They made it part of their terms of service agreements, right? And so what that is a situation, and you could see this happening with our CBDC as well. They could make it so that, no, a CBDC is not compulsory, but it will be compulsory if you use government services. And so suddenly what you find is that you can't live your life without actually participating in this. And what that is, you know, what Farzan was talking about was the public-private partnership between government and corporations. And by the way, what a public-private partnership is that's the definition of fascism. And that's where we're really going to, is a situation where governments and private corporations will make it so that you have to use these things like these digital IDs and like the CBDCs to do just the most basic things. You know, what if, say, for instance, your power company decides that you have to use a CBDC to pay your power bill or your water bill or whatever it is that you're paying? Suddenly you're going to get sort of trapped in the system, and we really don't have any choice over it. What I don't understand is why our politicians are actually allowing this to happen, because when you I just want to sort of take this one step further. When you make a transaction, say for instance, if I needed to pay you $20, Simon, and I use my CBDC wallet to pay your CBDC wallet, how it would go is it would come from my wallet through the Reserve Bank to you. And they make that sound like that's going to be a really simple way of doing it, because currently maybe I'm with ANZ Bank and you're with BNZ Bank, so it would have to go from ANZ into a sorting house over to your sorting house and then into your bank account. And so that's why it takes so long to get to you. And what they're saying is it's going to be much simpler because it would just go from me to the Reserve Bank to you. Okay? Think about that also on an international level. How's that going to go? It's going to have to go through another choke point as well. And in that case, I don't think it's been decided yet, but people are suggesting that it might be like the BIS, the Bank of International Settlements, or SWIFT, or something like that. Suddenly, we're talking about a sovereignty issue, because now you've got a multinational, massive conglomerate organization like the BIS controlling every transaction that goes from one country to another. This is an issue of control. And I think that's where all of these experts that I've spoken to, from Catherine Austin Fitz to Jody Brunning and Farzan Irani and G. Edward Griffin and Aaron Day and so on, this is where everyone's concern is that this is just a device of control. And in Catherine Austin Fitz's words, it's taxation without representation, and it's a modern form of slavery. So that's the concern around CBDCs.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons, not that I can speak for politicians, but my suspicion is a lot of people just see this as convenient. Some of those who have been speaking what they see as the benefits of CBDCs, oh, it's convenient. Alistair, it's your money. Simon, it's your money. You'll have much greater control. You won't have to worry about these big Australian banks. You'll be able to bypass them. It's your money. But of course it's not. Or rather, your convenience is being controlled by others. And you mentioned India, but one of the things that's always struck me is the China question, the social credit system over there, where if you're not a good party follower, you find that all of a sudden your government IDs and access to money falters. You can't get on the buses and the trains. And I'm actually working at the moment with a defector that I've known for a few years here now in New Zealand. Helped get his family over. We're working through language issues to try and actually explore what it looks like to live in a country where your most basic activities, including access to money, can be cut off. But I think just a lot of people don't understand, which is why what you're doing is so important, to actually get these ideas into people's heads. But if I could play devil's advocate,
yeah,
and I better stress that before listeners come chasing after me, like, why did you ask that of Alistair? But some people will say, look, we already have digital currencies. I've already, you know, you mentioned ANZ, ASB, you've got your apps, they're listing all the money. We use PayWave. We're already in that digital space. What is different about the CBDC dynamic?
Well, look, you're right. We do have digital currency already. There's two types of money that we have right now. We have physical cash, and that is produced by the Reserve Bank. And then we also have digital cash already, which is what is produced by our banks, okay? So when I'm paying you by FPOS, I'm using the digital cash. And when I go to my local farmer's market and I use my physical cash, that's the cash that the Reserve Bank has produced. So yes, you're right. And what is the difference? Well, this is the problem, is there is no real purpose for a CBDC. Now, in one of our episodes, in episode 3 with Catherine Austin Fitz, we played a bunch of different audio clips from people around the world. So in answer to your question, one of those audio clips was a guy called Neil Kashkari. Neil Kashkari is the president of the Minneapolis Federal Reserve Bank in the United States. There are 12 Federal Reserve Banks around the United States, and he is the president of one of those. And in this video, he literally asked the same question that you just asked, which is, what's the purpose? I don't understand. We've got digital cash already. We have PayPal. We have Venmo. We have all of these different abilities to be able to pay people digitally. What's the point in a CBDC? The answer is another couple of the clips that we played in that episode, episode 3 again, with Catherine Austin Fitz. The answer is that in one of those clips, we had Augustin Carstens. He's the head of the Bank of International Settlements. In another clip, we had Bo Lee, the deputy second in command at the IMF, okay? Former Chinese Reserve Bank governor, okay? And Augustin Carstens, the BIS guy, he says CBDCs means we will have absolute control of our product, of the money. Bo Lee from the IMF talks about how they will be able to control who spends the money and what you spend it on. That's the difference with a CBDC. A CBDC is programmable and it is surveillable. And you might also ask is, well, okay, so what's the point in all of that? Because to me, it seems pretty obvious that it's the control which is the point of it. We have a situation right now where in the United States, their national debt is now over $35 trillion. Every 100 days, just servicing that debt, it costs another $1 trillion. Okay, now let's just put that in perspective. $1 trillion. If you were to spend $1 million every day since the birth of Christ, since the year zero, you still wouldn't have spent $1 trillion. That's how much money we're talking about here. Okay.
It's eye-watering. It is absolutely eye-watering.
I heard RFK Jr. just the other day, the way he explained it, he said, in 5 years' time, 50% of the US tax take will be spent on servicing that debt. In 10 years, it'll be 100%. It is completely, you just can't continue with this. There is no way, the system is broken. So their solution is to provide this whole new money system. What I do not understand is how the world's media is completely ignoring it. Our New Zealand media here, for instance, they just don't want to know about it. They don't want to talk about it. But in the end, you know, that's the reason for it. It's because, in answer to your question, it's programmable and surveillable, so they can track it, they can trace it, they can control their product once it goes out into market. That's the reason why.
And I think, you know, there's always a place for trust in society, but it gets to ludicrous levels if people are prepared to just allow complete and utter trust into these banks, governments, global entities, to just allow them to do whatever, because we've lived enough of our lives so far, I'm not even just thinking recent years, where governments, be it here or overseas, breach that trust. And when you think about something as fundamental as money and what it enables you to do.
Yeah, and look, Augustin Carstens, who I just mentioned before, the head of the Bank of International Settlements, in a speech that I read as I was researching this show, he addressed the Central Bank of China, the People's Bank, I think it's called, and he stated, you know, trust is the foundation of all money. That's the cornerstone of it all. The problem with this situation is that we won't be able to trust it if people are watching, if people are always surveilling and manipulating the digitization of our money. So this is where I think I suppose the good news is, and the bad news is to me, is that if we want to do, we're not going to be able to close the Pandora's box that has been opened. The digitization of society is happening. The digitization of our money will happen in one form or another. What we need to do right now, and I think this is the lesson of the entire series to me, is that we need to start talking about it, number one. Number two, we need to start talking about it to our representatives. Make sure that they start to understand, because they are people like you and me, and they probably haven't thought through this enough. It is the loss of our freedom, but it is unstoppable, I believe. So what can we do about it? And I think the only thing we can do about it is put pressure on them to actually draft the laws to protect us. There need to be laws put in place so that they can't use it to manipulate us and take away our money. They, for instance, there should be a law put in place so that they cannot put expiry dates on our money. That should be yeah. one of the laws that they put in place, right? But the only way that we're actually going to we're actually going to be able to affect that is if we go and talk to our leaders, to go and talk to our representatives and make sure that they understand what is actually going on. I don't believe that we can actually stop it now, but what we can do is we can make them aware of it so that they can perhaps pass those laws, pass that legislation that is needed to protect us.
And that's why I think it's vitally important that you've done this documentary series. And, you know, to listeners, please check it out. It's amazing. It's in depth, a wide range of people. Alistair's pulled together, well, a fantastic series. And I think you're right, Alistair. It's about making sure, well, like we are doing here at RCR, actually having the conversations, which our mainstream or legacy media are not, and then in turn putting pressure onto our politicians. So how do listeners find your docuseries? Where do they need to go to?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so there's two different ways. nomoremoney.co.nz is the easy one. nomoremoney.co.nz. Once you go onto that landing page, you'll find our short teaser video that I made in the documentary style, which will hopefully get you interested enough to sign up and get the full series. The other way you can get to it is go to the Reality Check Radio website at realitycheck.radio. Right down the bottom, you'll see a link there for CBDCs. If you click on that, you'll go to the same page where you can go and find it. And as I said, it's a 10-part series. There's 10 episodes to listen to, experts from all over the world, and as well as here in New Zealand, to give it that New Zealand perspective. And I think if listening to it, you get anything of the same experience that I had making it, you will realize that our lives are about to change, but we need to affect it in some. We need to figure out ways of affecting it in a positive way.
Well, Alistair, thank you for what you're doing, trying to draw attention to this. I'm sure it's feeling like an uphill battle at times, as you say, with the general silence in society. But thank you for what you're doing. Can I encourage people, get onto that nomoremoney.co.nz, listen to it yourself, subscribe, share it with your friends and family. The more people who understand this, the better. And again, Alistair, thanks for joining the show this morning.
Thanks so much for having me, Simon. It's been a real pleasure.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.